weiß ich noch, ich erinnere mich wieder. Speaking, morning, Rabbosai. Speak about the Haftarah of this week, Vayechi. On one hand, it's one of the shortest. There are only 12 psukim in the Haftarah. And since the shortest itself is the one for Achrei Mos, which only has 9 psukim, we're very, very near the smallest. But on the other hand, there's a lot of history that is summed up, that's contained within the Haftarah of Vayechi. The subject itself is David HaMelech in his last days, giving his message, instructions to his son Shlomo HaMelech for what needs to be done, what Shlomo HaMelech needs to do in order to be a good king, and equally various things that needed to be done in David HaMelech's own reign, which apparently had not been done for one reason or another, and Shlomo HaMelech was told to do. Just out of interest, the numbers 10, 11, 12 and 13 regarding Shlomo HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech was 10 years old, he got married. When Shlomo HaMelech was 11 years old, he became the father of Rechavam. Because we are told that Rechavam was 41 years old when he became king, and Shlomo was 52 when he died. So literally he was only 11 years older than his son. So Shlomo HaMelech must have been 11 at the time when he became a father. So take off a year, he gets married at 10. Don't ask me to explain, I can't. I'm just telling you the numbers. At the age of 12, Shlomo HaMelech became king, and David HaMelech died. And 1 year later, he became a mitzvah like most people do. So that was the age of 13. But by the time he was bar mitzvah, he was already the king of Yisrael. He was already a married man and a father. And then he makes his bar mitzvah, Bli Anora. Now, we have the first pasuk. Starts off by saying, Vayikrevu Yimei David Lomus, the days of David came to die. And the question that is asked, what do you mean? The Midrash brings, what do you mean his days came near to die? How can one's days die? A person dies, but the days don't. So the Yalkut says, from the name of the Rabbonim, that a person's days cannot die. A tzaddik doesn't. The days come to an end. The days in this world come to an end. But the tzaddik continues. He leaves here, the neshama leaves here, he continues in Olam HaEmes. So in other words, he does not die by any definition. Only his physical days living in this world come to an end. So literally, the days die, the person does not. So he gave a tzivoy, a command to Shlomo, his son, saying, Anochi ha'olecha b'derech kol ha'oretz. I'm going in the way of all the earth. I'm going the way that everybody goes. He was 70 years old. From then till now, 70 has been a reasonable average age. So this number 70 from David HaMelech, question of why David lived 70 years. Itself, various reasons given, but Adam HaRishon would have lived for 1,000 years, but Adam HaRishon saw that David was not scheduled to have any life. And Adam HaRishon gave up 70 out of his 1,000. So Adam HaRishon went down to 930, and David had 70. We're also told, another way of looking at it, is going through various people who each lived slightly shorter than their father. Each person should have lived a certain amount. So if Yitzchok shows the model of the Ovos. The Ovos should have lived, each one, 180 years. Yitzchok lived the full 180 years. Avraham Avinu would have lived 180, but at the age of which Esav was 15, and Esav became a Rosh at the age of 15, so Avraham Avinu was taken away from the world 5 years early. So he wouldn't see what happened to Esav. That's 5 years out of Avraham's life. Then We find also Yaakov Avinu himself. Yaakov also didn't live 180 years. He lived 33 years less, various reasons given, 33 words that he said, various things that Yaakov Avinu did, and Yaakov lost 33 years because of that. Yosef would have lived the same as his father at least. But Yosef, because of what Yosef said about his father being, he allowed his father to be Eved, whatever, all sorts of reasons given. But Yosef then was the first one to pass away of his brothers, and Yosef died at 110. So Yosef was 37 years before his father. So if you put together that Yosef was 110 in relation to 147, and you put that Yaakov himself 147 in relation to 180, there's 37 and 33 there. That's one way of adding up to get the 70 years of Dovid. Okay, so different ways of the Chazal have of reaching the number 70. All right. So, Anochi Olech V'derech Kol Ha'oretz, and that's the normal amount, I'm going in the normal way, V'chozak Tov O'Yisrael Ish. You, my son, you're only 12 years old, but you will have to look after yourself. You can go and ask advice from whoever you like. It's your responsibility to get the advice from the right people. Up till now, for the first, literally the first part of David HaMelech's giving over, because he handed over, look in the first perek of Melachim Aleph, you'll find the first perek there, David hands over to Shlomo and gives as many instructions as to how to be a king. But then he tells him that I have to leave this world. I won't be able to continue instructing you. So therefore it's up to you to take your own advice and be mature. But the Chozakzor, you'll be strong, V'yisrael Ish, and act like a man, and therefore you'll be all right. You've got nothing to worry about, because even though I can't personally help you, you'll be able to do it yourself. And it carries on. The pasuk says, "Shomarto es mishmeres Hashem elokecho." You guard the charge of Hakadosh Baruch Hu to go bedrochov, to keep chukosov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chukos, his mitzvos, u'mishpotov, his mishpotim, and then the next word, v'edvosov, a word that's oftenly misread. It comes only a few times in Tanakh, the word edvosov, as opposed to edosov. If you look in Tilim Kuf Yud Tes, you'll find both words. You find edosecho and edvosecho. Right? Edvosov and edosov. In Kuf Yud Tes, when there's a vov there, it's always a dvosov. When there isn't a vov, it's always a dosov. The O is spelt without the vov. The vo is a consonantal vov, but then the vov is actually put in. Now, we all know the word mitzvah always has a vov in it. Mitzvah, mitzvos. You never have the word mitzvah without a vov. It's never mitzosecha, mitzosov. It's always mitzvosov, every time. But eight, come how you have both. Rav Shimshon for Al Hirsch, on the word, what does it mean? The idea, there are two ideas in the word. One is edus. Edus is any mitzvah that works in such a way that it gives evidence about something. We have our matzah on our plate, we eat our matzah on Seder night, looking at the matzah, what does it remind us? It reminds us of the slavery in Mitzrayim. We think about it. It reminds us of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out and brought us out with this food. This is the food we had the day we came out of Mitzrayim. So it's an edus to see it every single year. We have a whole ceremony around that to remind us of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. And that's the idea of the edus. But there's an extra thing. We have the word edi. Edi ayin dalad yud. Vayisnatzlu b'nei Yisrael es edyom mehar chorev. Posuk in Kisiso. Edyom, edi is a tachshit, an ornament, something which is beautiful, something which makes a woman look beautiful. So therefore the word edvah, when the word comes together, it's a mitzvah which gives an edus but makes you beautiful. If you keep this mitzvah properly, that you yourself, your neshama becomes beautiful with it, and you appreciate that, and that's the concept of edvosov, edvosecho.
Why is the vov not always pronounced when it's used as edus?
When it's used as eidus.
Yes, as evidence.
Because normally it's a normal vav that just doesn't have a meaning. The vav has no meaning itself. The root is eid, is the idea of witness, and that's all it is.
Right?
Pardon?
It's
added on, but when it's pronounced, it's because there are two meanings in it. Then the posuk continues. The posuk continues to tell that if you keep the mitzvahs properly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will fulfill his word. Yokim Hashem es devorah she'dibber olai lema. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu will keep. What he will do is that you, Shlomo, if you keep the mitzvahs properly, then the kingdom will stay with you. Hashem says, I promised David that the Malchus would stay in David's family, the dynasty, and that promise will only come true if you, Shlomo HaMelech, do what you can to deserve it. It was not dependent on anybody other than Shlomo HaMelech. We find of Shlomo HaMelech's children, of his descendants, some of them were good, some of them were not good. So whether the Malchus would stay with David HaMelech depended completely on whether Shlomo HaMelech was a good king. And we find that Shlomo HaMelech passed the test he was meant to pass. We don't find that everything Shlomo HaMelech ever did was perfect. We find he is criticized. But nevertheless, he was good enough that the Malchus would stay. And that was the one thing. So when you talk about Mashiach ben David, why are we looking forward to Mashiach ben David, Mashiach from David HaMelech's family? There was never a rule from the start that Mashiach has to come from David's family. If Mashiach had come before David HaMelech was born, wouldn't have been Mashiach ben David. But the point is that now HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a promise, and because Shlomo HaMelech was a good king, was a good son of David HaMelech, therefore the Mashiach that we are expecting thousands of years later will be a descendant of David HaMelech. Not necessarily of Shlomo. That's the point. There's no, we don't talk about Mashiach ben Shlomo. It could be the Mashiach will be from Shlomo HaMelech, but he might not be. But he'll certainly be from David. Why would it be from David? Because Shlomo HaMelech did the right thing. Shlomo HaMelech kept the Malchus in David's family. Right, now we come on to the history. V'gamato yodato, you know Ashes Asher Oso Liyov ben Tzruya. You know what Yov ben Tzruya did. Right, let's go through about 40 years of history here, which David HaMelech is now trying to wrap up so that Shlomo HaMelech can start with everything put to order. Yoav ben Tzruya was David HaMelech's nephew. Tzruya was David's sister. He had two sisters. One of them was Tzruya. And to my knowledge, I don't think anywhere, certainly not in Melachim, I'm not sure about Divrei Hayomim, whether it gives the name of Tzruya's husband. Yoav is always called Yoav ben Tzruya. He is the son of his mother. Very, very strange. You find anybody in Tanakh like that, where the person is only known by their mother's name and not by their father's name. But Tzruya was clearly not his father. Tzruya, we are told, was David HaMelech's sister. So Yoav ben Tzruya was David's general. He was a very good general. He was a Talmid Chochem. He was a Machnis Oreach, we're told about him. He wouldn't sit down to eat till he made sure that the Aniyim were invited as well. He was a big, big tzaddik. Yoav ben Tzruya was a very big tzaddik. However, we find he was controversial. He became the general as soon as David HaMelech became king, 40 years earlier, and he managed to stay in the position as David's general. I started off by telling you that the man was A, a Talmid Chacham, and B, he was a tzaddik. Having said that, he did two things that were wrong, very wrong. He killed hundreds of people personally in his life in the way of battle. And that's a mitzvah. There's nothing wrong with killing people in battle. But of all the people he killed, two people were wrong. Now, you know, we're not talking about somebody, Chas v'Shalom, going out in Mossad and committing a murder. We're talking about somebody who is a big tzaddik, who is involved the whole time in killing people when it's the right thing to do. And unfortunately, two of them, he felt it was the right thing to do, but it wasn't. Killing somebody when it's not the right thing to do is called murder. It's not murder in the sense of your Mossad person thinks of murder, but it's murder in the sense of the terrorist says Lo Tirtzach. So there were two people in the course of Job's career of killing hundreds, if not thousands of people. He was a tremendously good soldier. So in a career of killing hundreds, he killed two people he shouldn't have killed. And because of that, he's going to lose his Olam Habba. Literally. His Olam Habba, his whole Olam Habba was due to get. He would have lost it completely because of two murders that had not been dealt with. So you can say, why did David HaMelech not deal with that himself in the course of his lifetime? The answer was either because Yoav was too strong for David HaMelech. That's one answer given, that David himself couldn't do so. Also because the kingdom needed Yoav. Yoav was such a good general, David couldn't take the chance of having Yoav executed by a Sanhedrin, by a Beis Din. And in fact, even in case, there are cases where a king can say you're murdered by Malchus, and even if the Sanhedrin cannot execute him, the king himself can have him executed. But David did not do so. He chose for his own reasons that Yoav should be left alone. So with all the things that Yoav did, he was a great tzaddik, as I told you, but two deaths had not been in any way avenged. So he told Shlomo, when David was about to die, that Yoav has to be killed. For two people he killed, he shouldn't have killed. You have to have him killed, and that's what happened, as we'll see. Who are the two people? Avner ben Ner and Amoso ben Yeser. Right, so let's go back. Go back to the beginning. When Shaul HaMelech, who was the first king of Israel, and Shaul HaMelech was his general. Avner was a cousin of his. Avner was the general in Shaul's army. And as you know, when David was first chosen as to come to the palace of Shaul, then Shaul got jealous of him. Shaul was mentally ill, and that's why there's no blame given to Shaul. Shaul tried very hard to get David killed. You all might see him in Shmuel Aleph. He tried to have David killed. David had to run away. He had to stay away, and he had to go hide among the Plishtim, one thing after another. And in the end, David survived, and Shaul was killed in the course of the battle against the Plishtim. After Shaul was dead, Shmuel HaMelech had said that David will be the king of Israel. Very nice. After Shmuel HaNovi had said that David will be the king. However, whether he'll become the king straight away, not necessarily. And Avner, who himself was, I said, related to Shaul, Avner paskened that we needed Umelochim Mechalotecho Yetzeu, that there will be kings. It says in Vayishlach, kings will come out of you. And this was a nevuah said to Yaakov. Yaakov was given this nevuah, kings will come out from you, at the time when 11 of his sons were already born. Kings will come out of you. What do you mean come out of you? It must be that you'll have another child, and that child himself will be the father of kings. So therefore the father, who's the one child left to be born? Binyamin. Therefore, there won't be one child of Binyamin who's going to be a king, there must be two. So therefore there was the first king, Shaul HaMelech, came from Binyamin. That's the first one. But there's got to be another one, said Avner. And the other one, so therefore, as even though he had full emunah that David would be king one day, there has to be another king from Binyamin first. And therefore he personally set up Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth, the one of the sons of Shaul who survived Shaul, he had him set up as being the king. Avner was the power behind the throne, but at the same time, Ishbosheth was the king. So David was accepted by Shevet Yehuda only, and Ishbosheth was accepted by the other 11 Shevatim. That's what happened. So now, as a result, Avner was...
Why did they accept the Avtocha from Yaakov? I don't understand.
Because they felt that David was going to be king straight away. Shmuel had said that David will be the king. They didn't feel that they needed to be. I don't know. That's Avner's reason. I don't know why they passed against it. All right? But anyway, but Avner was famous, and Avner was a big Talmud Chacham as well. So, what happened was, there was a battle at one stage between Yoav's army for David and Avner's army for Ishbosheth. They had a battle, and Avner's army were losing. So Abner himself was on the run. Abner was a general, was a brilliant swordsman. The fact that he was on the run doesn't mean he was dead yet. So he was running away, and who was chasing him? Asael, Yoav's brother, another nephew of David HaMelech. So Yoav's brother Asael was chasing him, and Abner looked round and he could see he was being chased by Asael. And he knew very well that if it came to a fight between him and Asael, he would win. So he shouted back to him, don't run after me, save your own life, and if you're worried about the busha, then pretend you're chasing somebody else, go and run after somebody else. I'm warning you, run after somebody else, not after me. As a result, Asael took no notice, he kept running, he got nearer and nearer to Abner. Abner could work out exactly his own sword, or his spear that he had, was double-ended. Blade at both ends. So literally, as he got near enough, literally so near, Abner took his own spear and one stab back. While he was running that way, he stabbed back, got him exactly by the heart and killed Asael. Literally, that was how skilled Abner was. He was literally, he warned Asael, it made no difference, so he killed Asael. Obviously, Abner escaped. Yoav was very furious that his brother had been killed. Very, very angry that his brother had been killed. He tried later on to have Abner taken to a Sanhedrin, have him taken to a Beis Din, and Abner said, I was saving my life. Yes, pikuach nefesh, excuse me, I'm allowed to save myself. To which Yoav said, if you're so brilliant that you're able to stab somebody backwards while you're running in that direction, you can stab him back, then at the same time, surely you could find some other way of stabbing him in a way you wouldn't have killed him. You could have wounded him instead of killing him. Right? And the answer back to that is, in the time of war, you don't have a din to save yourself, you have to try and wound. It's only when a person is clearly able to do so in a time of peace that one wounds rather than kills. But in this case, this was war, and as war, you don't have to take the effort to wound, and that way he was allowed to kill, and that way he can get away. So therefore, what he did was right, but Yoav never accepted that. So, Yoav did not accept, Abner had won, but they had an argument, and in the middle of it, Yoav asked Abner a shaila, how do you do chalitza? Chalitza, obviously, take a shoe off. The woman takes the shoe off the man. He said, tell me, if the woman is crippled, she can't use her hands, how does she do chalitza? To which Abner couldn't see what the question was leading at, but said she uses her teeth. She can use her teeth to take the man's shoe off his feet. No problem, use your teeth. How can you do that? Abner bent over. 2 seconds later, he was dead. You don't bend over when Yoav was there. Nobody had disarmed Yoav. Literally, Abner bent over to show him how to solve a shaila, and Yoav took his sword, and the moment Abner raised himself slightly, he killed him. That was a terrible thing. We have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, the second Perek, about it, that David HaMelech was very upset. He fasted that day. He went to the Levi. He gave a hesped for Abner. Even though Abner had stopped him being king over Klal Yisrael, nevertheless, he had respect for Abner. And the respect he had, he came to the Levi. Everybody could see that David had not ordered Abner's death. So why doesn't David do something about Yoav? Sort of puts it away in his notebook for later. I told you the various questions of why David didn't do anything. He felt it was not a sensible time to do anything. He left it. He literally left it. But 40 years later, when David's about to die, he tells his son, you've got to do something about what he did to Abner. Well, because Abner was.
Yeah.
David didn't see it as a merida.
No, you're saying that Yoav
didn't go to the bar
because...
No, Yoav did at the end. Oh, the only point was that David could have had him killed earlier. David felt, I don't want to. Right? But the question is what happens later? And later he felt, when he died, he'd owe him a favour by having him killed. That was one of the people he'd killed who he shouldn't have killed at the time. Next one was about 35, 37 years later, was Amasa, another nephew. At the time when David HaMelech, unfortunately, had his own son, Avshalom, made a rebellion against his father. And Avshalom threw his own father out of Yerushalayim for 6 months. So literally, Avshalom would have taken over the kingdom. And David HaMelech wouldn't have had a chance. And equally, Avshalom would have had his father killed. Avshalom went to ask advice. Achisophel was the man he asked, who had been David's advisor, but Achisophel had fallen out with David. And Avshalom asked his father asked Achisophel what to do. And Achisophel said, "Your father is on the run. Let me take an army of 10,000 people tonight and go and kill him tonight. I'll kill your father tonight, and tomorrow morning there won't be any rebellion left. We'll get rid of your father straight away." That would have happened. David HaMelech had davened that Achisophel's advice would not be listened to. The point about Achisophel is that his advice was brilliant and always correct. Now you can imagine, how do you fight the man who's always right? We're talking about a man who's got Ruach HaKodesh. Whatever he's getting, brilliant Talmud Chacham, a big tzaddik, and whatever he says is going to be right is going to work. How do you stop him? If he's going to be right, the only thing you can daven for is that please let them not listen to the man. Not please Hashem, let him talk rubbish. He can't talk rubbish. That's not natural. He talks sense. So therefore, David did what happened. David was running, and Achisophel said, "Let me go and get an army." And Avshalom was going to listen. Okay, you say that, we'll do that. We'll get my father tonight. What happened? Hushai Arki was a good friend of David. Hushai Arki went to Avshalom and said, with great respect to Achisophel, the advice will not work. Why? Because your father is not an idiot. He would expect an ambush. He would expect that they're going to come against him. He won't be with all the men. All the other people are going out of Yerushalayim on the main road. He will be hiding. Your father will not expose himself, because your father knows the whole point of the rebellion is to get rid of him. When you get rid of the leader, after that, there's no more rebellion anymore. There's no more problem. Everybody will come back to Yerushalayim and accept you, Absalom will be the new king. So therefore your father won't take the chance of being with them. He'll be hiding. The truth was, he won't be hiding. David wasn't hiding. David never expected an ambush that night. He was not hiding at all. Achisophel's advice was brilliant. Had it been carried out, it would have come true. As it was, it wasn't carried out. And as it was, 6 months later, there was a battle and Avshalom got killed. Despite the fact that David didn't want Avshalom killed. Nevertheless, Yoav took the law into his own hands. Avshalom was clearly a murderer. Malchus was a traitor, and therefore he had to be killed. He had to be killed, and Avshalom was killed by Yoav himself. He had the man killed, and that was it. And then David was told, "Your son is dead. Go back to Yerushalayim, you're now the king again. No problem." After who'd been Avshalom's own general, his cousin Amasa ben Yeser, who was another nephew of David. And he had been the general of Avshalom in the rebellion, and he had apologized to his uncle David and said, "I'm very, very sorry." And David had said, "Okay, I'm mochel you. Come and you be my general now instead of Yoav." So David tried to push Yoav out. It didn't work. Yoav was not a person who accepted demotion. So therefore what happened? Amasa was the general, and a new rebellion started almost immediately by a man called Sheva ben Bichri. And Sheva ben Bichri came along against another rebellion against David. And so David said to Amasa, "Get an army together." But Amasa went to get an army, but they just started learning. After one battle, they'd started sat down to learn. And he thought, "I'll leave them to learn. And when they finish the sugya they're learning, then we'll get them together and start fighting again." Right? And that itself, the question was, is that right or wrong? You can see two sides to it. On one hand, yes, they should be allowed to learn. On the other side, this is a national thing to get a national battle to get David HaMelech to be the king. In which case, you can't learn, haven't got time to learn now, go and fight. You've got two opinions there. Yoav came along and saw, and Amasa was, so to speak, slow in getting an army together. So what did he do? I've offered him in 3 days to get an army. He hadn't done so. So what happened? Yoav went to meet his own cousin Amasa, and Yoav, I said, he's a skilled man. He went along with his sword loose. I mean, no serious soldier has a loose sword on him. He had his sword loose in his belt, and as he walked to meet Amasa, it literally fell out, as swords do when they're loose. So as he said, sorry about this, bent down, picked it up, and on the way up, killed Amasa. That was how he did it. Literally within seconds, and Amasa was dead. Those were the two executions that Yoav had carried out in 40 years. He'd killed, as I said, hundreds of people perfectly legitimately. He'd killed Amasa, and he had killed as well. He'd killed Avner, and the Pasuk doesn't mention it, but there's also Uriah Hachiti. Let's very quickly, Uriah Hachiti was about with Bathsheba. When David, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Kuf Zayin about David HaMelech, that David says to Hashem, why is it that Avraham, Yitzchok and Yaakov we have the names in our tefillah, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchok, Elokei Yaakov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the God of Avraham, Yitzchok and Yaakov. Why is he not Elokei David? Why can't we say Elokei David as well? Now what's the question? What's going on here? The God is the God of whom? The Ribono Shel Olam is the God of Adolf Hitler. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the whole world. He's the God of everybody. The answer is, who does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to be connected to? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I am the God of the people who show by their whole lives that they are totally emunah in me and totally in my avodah. And who were the three people, the greatest three people, who did that to make the world what it is today? And that's Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov. The world wouldn't be what it is without Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov. They are the people whose lives were totally devoted to avodas Hashem. So in other words, not a question, Hashem, I made the world, I'm your God, your God, your God. No, who are the people who look up to me that way? So David said, surely what I've done for Klal Yisrael, uniting Klal Yisrael together after 400 years in Eretz Yisrael, we finally have Klal Yisrael all together, surely you could say about me that you're Elokei David. You're the God of David, surely you should say that. David and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, there's only one difference. They were tested by me and you have not been tested. To which David HaMelech then made a mistake, one of the biggest mistakes of his career, Posuk base of Tilim Chavov, B'choneini Hashem Menaseini. Test me, Hashem. Oh, I remember Miller Zatal and Gates said, sharing this, you don't ask the Rabbonu Shalom for a test. Let's imagine you've got a brilliant child, the inspector comes round the class and asking questions. This kid always got his hand up. I know, I know, I know. Ta-ta. And then the inspector then says, I've got a brilliant, very hard question here. Nobody can answer this question. And this kid jumps up. Me! I know it, I know it. Test me, I'll give you an answer. How's the inspector going to help the boy? He says he knows everything. If you give him a question and he gets the answer, he'll be the biggest head in the world. You've got to find a question he can't answer. You have to, for his sake. The humility that's needed is more important than the praise he's going to get. He's got to get it wrong. So David HaMelech was given a test. The Gemara says the test that David HaMelech had, ordinarily he would have passed. But in the case he was in, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away the normal help he gives. Everybody gets helped as opposed to in their own madrega. You get the help. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tests you, and you get the help. There's no test you get, you're going to fail. Because you have the help. It's up to you to use it. If you know you want to go to a shop and buy something, if you know who to ask and to find out when the shop is open and how to get to the shop, you can find it all out. It's up to you to make the effort, but the information is all there. David HaMelech, at the time he asked, had he not asked for the test, Hashem would have given it to him and he could have won. But unfortunately he asked for it, and because he asked for it, that's what went wrong. So what happened? So he then went and asked for a test, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the problem. He saw this woman, Bathsheba, and he took her a king. She, first of all, different opinions, but the simple opinion, simple of the Gemara, is that every single soldier, she was the wife of Uriah, Uriah was a fighting in a battle, and every single soldier who went out to battle for David HaMelech was given a get before the battle started. Kohanim, presumably didn't go into battle. There aren't that many Kohanim around, and the Kohanim just wouldn't work. But anybody else divorces his wife, and that way, as soon as he comes back, if he's alive, he comes back and he remarries his wife, no problem whatsoever. She can marry anybody else if she wants to, but she doesn't want to. She wants her husband back. She doesn't want to be an aguna. I mean, a dead body in a battle, given, literally, the body's been cut up, and if the body's been lying around in the heat for a couple of days before they discover the body, there's no way you can identify it. The woman, the wife, is an aguna for the rest of her life. You'll never be able to prove the husband's dead. So David and Shmuel made a rule that everybody going out to battle would divorce their wives. So this woman, Bathsheba, was a divorced woman. It's not very nice for David to take her. He's allowed to take any single woman he wants.
You're saying it wasn't that nice?
There's Machlokas Rashi Tosfos.
Yeah,
I'm telling you Tosfos. Machlokas Rashi Tosfos. I'm telling you Tosfos. I'm telling you Tosfos. Right? So what happens here? What happens here is that he takes Bathsheba and takes, once he's been with her, he sends her back home again, and she then sends him a message she's pregnant. It doesn't look nice. He has done nothing wrong. Absolutely nothing wrong. But it doesn't look nice. And as a result of that, what happens? He calls Uriah back from the battle and literally brings him to the palace and sends him home. Tells him to go home and remarry your wife. The idea being is that, all right, you're going to confuse the paternity of the child, but if at least when she turns out and tells everybody she's pregnant in 2 weeks' time, then at least people know Uriah was at home. But Uriah's such a good soldier, he doesn't go home. He comes back to the palace and he won't go home. He sleeps on the steps of the palace. So David brings him in the next day, gives him a suda, everything he can for him, makes no difference. Why don't you go home? All my friends are out in battle, they're in the trenches, and I'm going to go home to my wife. I can't do that. But now Uriah's played into the game. Now Uriah said, I'm not going home. When the king tells you to go home, you go home. That's real Merida Mamalchus. You cannot go against the king. And he didn't go home, so therefore David sends him off to battle. Very nice, but you've got to make sure he gets killed this time. He's got to be killed. So therefore he sends a letter to Yoav saying, put Uriah in the middle of the battle where he is going to get killed. Literally, a very stupid thing for a general to do. Which general takes a good soldier and puts him somewhere dangerous? That's not how you win a battle. But Yoav accepted the letter, and he put Uriah exactly where he would get killed, and he got killed. That solved the problem later on. The baby, by the way, that she was expecting, she lost. But David then married her, and she was a great woman. We're told that Min HaShemayim, David and Bathsheba were meant for each other. That wasn't a problem, and Bathsheba became the mother of Shlomo HaMelech. Wonderful. But the point was Uriah, how that was done. And Uriah, Baruch Hashem, had happened to help by the fact that he refused to obey the king's order. But what happened was that this letter had been sent to Yoav. The other generals went to Yoav and said, why did you do a stupid thing to put a brilliant soldier where he gets killed? What kind of a general are you? To which he said, I thought I had a good reason for it. Which they said, this good reason, you don't go around killing our best soldiers in your good reasons. So Yoav was afraid that they would kill him. So therefore he showed them the letter. And that exposed David, and that made it public. Right? So therefore David was angry. Yoav could have got out of it some other way without showing the letter. The letter was private. So that's not mentioned in the posuk directly, but this is what Yoav had done. Altogether, so the various things had been problems for Klal Yisrael, and so Yoav had to be killed. And that actually happened after David died. Shlomo had Yoav ought to have him arrested, and Yoav ran to the Mishkan and stayed in the Mishkan. He thought, they won't kill me in the Mishkan. Shlomo HaMelech asked Ben Yoav and Yoda, the Kohen Gadol, who was a new general, also, he said, no, the din is, if he won't come, we kill him inside. So he went into the Mishkan, and Yov was killed inside the Mishkan. So that was the last thing that David wanted done before he died. But he also asked, the Haftorah continues, it talks about another couple of points about the people who had helped him. So Barzillai HaGiladi was a man who helped David on the run from when he was on the run from his son Avshalom, and he invited him afterwards to come back with me to the palace. You supported me while I was running, so I'll support you. Barzillai was an old man, he didn't want to be supported. He said, my children can. And David told Shlomo, make sure that the sons of this man, he gave us food and beds to sleep on, so you make sure he's got that. So you give that to him. And equally, your Rebbe, Shimi ben Gera, an ancestor of Mordechai, he was a man who came and cursed David, and David had forgiven him. He'd asked David to forgive me, he forgave him, but for a man who cursed David HaMelech, it wasn't acceptable. So consequently, Shlomo HaMelech was told, have him killed, find an excuse. So he gave him a rule, you're putting you on house town arrest, you stay in Yerushalayim. And he stayed in Yerushalayim for 2 years, till one of his servants ran away, he ran after. He got the servant back, but he broke the rule, and Shlomo HaMelech had him killed. So that was the points that needed to be put together, and they were put together, and we're told David HaMelech died in Yerushalayim, was buried in Yerushalayim. He'd reigned altogether 40 years, 7 years in Hebron, 33 years in Yerushalayim, and Shlomo HaMelech was established as the king of Israel for the next 40 years.
Very complicated issue. I wouldn't have touched that in my million years.
Yeah, it sounds brutal, doesn't it?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.